discovered on Puja 2014 in New Vrindavan.
Effects of the ritualistic brahmanas who neglected the gopas when they begged for food for Krishna and Balaram, contrasted by their very devotional wives who were not ritualistic, and simply upon hearing the names of Krishna and Balaram, everything for the pleasure. And Krishna, returning home, observed Nanda Maharaj preparing another ritualistic sacrifice. And he began to question his father about the nature of the sacrifice. Is this according to scripture? Or is it just custom? Who's the beneficiary? And what benefits will we derive? And at first Nanda Maharaj was thinking that this child is too young to understand the intricacies of this ceremony. But then the words of the all-knowing Garbhamuni resounded in his heart that this child is as good as Lord Narayan. And there was some difference of opinion as to what that actually meant. But Nanda Maharaj was thinking, perhaps Krishna can understand. So he explained basically the utilitarian principle based on mutual cooperation amongst all members of society for the ongoing safety and well-being of that society. Krishna descended to this world to inspire complete devotion to himself to the extent that for his pleasure, his devotees will forfeit all worldly obligations and aspirations, even if the consequence may be their having to face the destruction of the whole universe. Because in love, they find that complete assurance of faith that no harm can ever befall the servant of Krishna, even if, for the sake of pleasing him, they evoke the wrath of the fury, the destructive clouds named Sambhartaka, whose only purpose is to annihilate the universe at the time of the apocalypse. And then Krishna went on to speak in such a way as would aggravate the false pride which is growing in the heart of Indra. Because he cannot tolerate false pride in his devotees. And really, the soul cannot exist without pride. He cannot experience a healthy spiritual condition without pride. We differentiate false pride, which means in your own achievements, abilities, propensities, whereas devotees always give all glory to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. With knowledge that any good that we may achieve is only by their mercy. And by giving all that credit to its rightful source is really our only protection from false pride. The Indra Yajna was meant to actually worship Krishna through his intermediary, Indra, who's in charge of, amongst other things, rainfall, so necessary for the flock upon which the Brijavasis were dependent. But Krishna refuted that argument. If we're dependent on Indra for rain, then why does it rain in the ocean? There's no need for water. And he gave so many arguments. And Nanda Maharaj did not give in to Krishna's demands because of logic, because he was actually propounding karma mimamsa, which is Mayavad philosophy. Not very convincing or appealing to the Brijavasis. It wasn't Krishna's philosophical arguments or rationale. It was Krishna's charm. And Krishna utilized that false pride of Indra to inaugurate a very meaningful and blissful ceremony which would inspire and uplift devotees forever thereafter. And even in the whole conflict with Indra, Krishna did not remove all his pride, false pride. He left a little bit because he knew in the future Rukmini would want to purge out the flower, and then Satyabhana would want a whole tree, and there would be another wonderful lila unfolding with Indra. So he left enough pride in his heart for continuation of his pastimes. And today is the day that Sri Krishna himself personally inaugurated Sri Govardhan Parikrama, which devotees have faithfully observed ever since. How can you understand the appearance of Krishna, the appearance of Govardhan in a land where there is no birth or death? It's inconceivable. The birth of Govardhan took place from one perspective when Sri Krishna was in that highly euphoric state following Rasa Lila, when he was very surprised to hear that Srimati Radharani still had one grand desire yet to be fulfilled. And she requested Sri Krishna, if you are truly pleased with me, with my love for you, with my friend's devotion, and this dance of love, then please create somewhere in Vrindavan Forest on the bank of the Jamuna an even more ideal setting for Rasa Lila. After which Krishna, in meditation, searched the unknown depths of his own heart to find the source of fulfillment for Srimati Radharani, the origin of pleasure for himself, which grants inspiration to all his devotees. And from his meditative trance, emerging from his chest, a droplet of bliss emerged, and as it descended to the ground, it solidified into a storm, which quickly grew into a hill, expanded into a mountain, and began to cover all the Braj, at which point Krishna slapped his mouth and said, "What are you doing? Usurping the place of all the Brajavasis, not leaving room for anyone besides yourself?" At which time the hill adjusted to an appropriate size and form. And that mountain manifest, palatial caves, ambrosial springs, streams, waterfalls, and kuns to hold that nectar, and a tapestry, a vast pastoral, infinite tapestry made of intertwined vines and flowering trees. And it was such an enchanting mountain that, and here's where you run into the limitations of three-dimensional chronology. Because in the previous yuga, Govardhana was manifest before his birth. And Hanuman was outdoing all the other monkeys in the army of Lord Ram, who were all picking up huge boulders and casting them into the ocean, inscribed with the holy name of Ram, which made them float. And Hanuman, he was picking up whole mountains and flying across, even all the way the length and breadth of Bharatvarsha, finding the most choice mountains to expedite the bridge to reach Lanka and rescue Sita. And when he saw Govardhana, he was so enchanted. Because up until even recent times, when even ordinary men would build a bridge, they would have some kind of ornamentation on the bridges because they took pride in their work. And Hanuman was thinking, this mountain will be the supreme ornamentation on the bridge to Lanka. So he tried to pick it up, but found it, he was unable to move the mountain. An experience which he understood indicated the divine nature of that mountain, so he prayed to Govardhana to assist him in the service of the Lord, at which point Govardhana flew into the hand of Hanuman, at which instant conch shells resounded from the other side of the bridge in Lanka, indicated that the battle was about to begin. The bridge was completed, and Hanuman Hunter went off to lead the monkeys. So he dropped Govardhana. And Govardhana was very disturbed, thinking that he would be left out in the Leela of Ram. But Hanuman assured him with a prediction that in reciprocation to your eagerness to serve, my Lord will return to you and accept you as an umbrella to protect all the Brajavasis when assaulted by the wrath of Indra. And then when Hanuman arrived to lead the monkeys in war, he told Ram what he had encountered. And Lord Ramachandra affirmed his prediction that when I play in my future lila, Govardhana inscription of my name upon these boulders and mountains which are floating in the ocean. Will be surpassed by Govardhan. These stones floating in the ocean, due to the empowerment of my holy name in the impression of my lotus feet, those stones and mountains which grant liberation to those who offer them proper worship, will be vastly surpassed by the glories of Govardhan, who will float in the sky and award prema bhakti to those who worship him. So, as the lila of Govardhan Puja unfolded, and the gopas, the elder gopas, were talking amongst themselves that Nanda Maharaj assured us that it is the empowerment of Lord Narayan which makes Krishna so appear to be so powerful. But you know, we've heard every day Krishna kills these Rakshasa monsters, but we usually hear it from our children, the little gopas. But for 7 days, we have witnessed something most remarkable, how Krishna, this child, using only the pinky of his left hand, is not only effortlessly holding the mountain in the sky, but it's all play for him. This is not indicative of the potencies of Lord Narayan, that this child is playing with the mountain like a toy. And they were perplexed, and they approached Nanda Maharaj and said, "We have some doubt about this assured empowerment. That it appears that your son Krishna is in truth Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that he's just attracting the empowerment of Lord Narayan, because the potencies we have just witnessed are beyond those of Vaikuntha." And Nanda Maharaj he told them, son be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He's so attached to the lap of his mother. He's so dependent on being coddled. He's so dejected if anyone neglects him in any way. He becomes hungry and thirsty, and he steals, and he lies, and he plays tricks and games, and if there's not enough sugar in the sweet rice, you will experience a colossal temper tantrum. but the gopas were not to be so easily convinced. Furthermore, they kind of argued with Nanda Maharaj. Even the minor avatars, they take birth in high-class families. But Krishna has taken birth in a gopa family. What's more, all of us are more attached to Him than we are our own children, our homes, our wives, our hearts, our souls, or anything. It all spontaneously flows to Krishna. And what is more perplexing is He has reciprocal, although greater, affection and attachment for each and every one of us. This does not indicate the empowerment of Lord Narayan or the all-pervading omniscient super soul who's impartial. Krishna is very partial. So Nanda Maharaj could not be swayed from his commitment. And he assured them that Krishna is not God. He is human. And Garga Muni explained, do not be bewildered by the activities of your child, meaning don't think of him as God, because that will very much disturb him. So Nanda Maharaj explained so beautifully, if you continue to think of my child as God, that will disturb him, because your natural spontaneous love be crippled, thinking that he's more supernatural than natural, more superhuman than human, more awesome than charming. So don't think like that. Simply continue to lavish your love and kindness upon him. Don't disturb either him or yourselves by this lingering suspicion that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not God. He's my son. He's the child of all of us. He's the friend of little Gopas and the boyfriend of little Gopis. Nanda Maharaj is so convinced that all the Gopas had to accept. And he added that what Garga Muni said that has you so perplexed, that the potencies of Lord Narayan will be manifest through him, all that means is he will do anything to protect us. To the extent of what you've just witnessed. So while this very intense philosophical discussion was going on in the court of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna and Balaram returned from the forest, and everyone totally forgot their suspicion that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God. And Shiva Shukadev Goswami, in recounting this lila, invokes the Lord's mercy with that series of verses. Indra became enraged and insulted Raj. And Krishna saw the condition of those cows and those gopas who know no other shelter than him. May that Lord of the cows and destroyer of Indra's false pride be pleased upon us all. So, at the end of that conversation, culminating in Krishna and Balaram entering the assembly, asking what was going on, and they completely forgot what was going on. eclipsed all the majesty of their remembrance of the previous days. So while all the Brijavasis and all of creation was immersed in unprecedented upsurge of joy, there was only one person, really, who was so discouraged by the whole series of events that he was on the verge of literally suicide. At which time, the all-knowing Brihaspati, who is the guru of the demigods, appeared at Indra's assembly and rebuked him. He told Indra, his disciple, in a sense, that you have created an enemy by your own pride. Krishna is not an enemy to anyone, but you have made him an enemy in your own mind. And he will not be pacified by another attack, this time upon yourself. And Indra said, well, how can I live and how can I find forgiveness for such a heinous offense? Brihaspati said, I don't know. You better go to Brahma, your grandfather. He's the wisest of all the universe. He can surely give you appropriate guidance. So he went to Brahma, who told him, after rebuking him again, that you can be freed from your offenses only if you feed, circumambulate, and please Krishna's cows, who are especially dear to him. And Brahma was very specific. The primeval mother of all cows in this world is Surabhi, amongst the wives of Kashyapa, who gave birth to all the cows in this world. And she's also Krishna, or Indra's aunt. So Indra went to Surabhi and begged her intercession on his behalf. And she was actually nudging Indra forward to Braj because he was so racked with shame and guilt and really fear. Amongst other things, fear that the demons would overpower him because he would lose everything by offending Krishna. So he's so seized with fear that Surabhi is nudging him on. And as they approached Vrindavan, and Surabhi saw Gopal playing his flute in a secluded place, calling Surabhi and Indra to come forward. But all Indra could see was monsoon clouds and flashes of lightning and the roars of thunder. And Surabhi, and he was just seized with fear, and Surabhi told him, that's not the cloud. That is Shyamasundara. What you're mistaking as lightning are his glistening ornaments. That what you're mistakenly hearing as rolls of thunder is actually the sweet and chanting song of his flute. So come with me. He's calling you, but you can't hear or see because of the contamination of this false pride, which has so distorted your perception of everything. And then Indra, guided by Surabhi, could actually hear that enchanting song of the flute calling him. And then he could vaguely perceive the beautiful enchanting form of Shyamasundara. And he began to move forward, but Surabhi told him, get down off your elephant. Go alone and place your crown. Take off your crown, place your head in the dust of Raj at his lotus feet. Inches started, but then he was again seized with fear. Fear that Krishna would reject him because of his most abominable attitude and behavior. And again, Surabhi nudged him forward with the assurance that sincere repentance evokes mercy even from ordinary people in this world. What to speak of the most gentle, loving person of all. So, and she said, I'll accompany you for support. So Surabhi, leading Krishna to Gopal, first prayed to him, thank you, my Lord, for protecting my children. Even though the cows of Braj are Surabhis from Goloka Vrindavan, and this Surabhi is from the heavenly Goloka of this world, she had affection for them as if they were her own children. And she was so grateful to Krishna for saving her children. And then she confided in Krishna that as a cow, I'm the abode of all the demigods. And you're the lord of the cows. And you're intermediary Indra has not been good to my children. So we want to coronate you as Govinda, which means the Indra of the cows, which includes the senses. Earth. And Krishna asked Surabhi, on whose authority can you suggest that you coronate me as a king? I'm a Gopa, little Gopa. And Surabhi, very confident, she said, I'm speaking on behalf of what Lord Brahma has already told me. So word spread quickly throughout Braj that Krishna would be coronated the Lord of the cows with this new name. Suggested by Surabhi and officially delivered by Indra. The name Govinda. Word spread. And the forest and sky above filled with devas, and bearing gifts for Krishna's coronation. And Surabhi led the heavenly ladies in bathing Krishna with milk. And whatever was needed for this grand celebration just magically appeared. For a canopy, Garuda appeared in the sky and spread his wings. They needed a stand for the RT paraphernalia. Mount Meru expanded into a crystal stand. And Vayu offered these celestial chamras bedecked with jewels. The earth produced her finest treasures, and the sylvan goddesses, the Vandevas, offered essential aromas. The milk ocean offered the conch shells, which resounded in such a pleasing, auspicious rhythm throughout the land. And in Airavata was allowed to come forward at this time and bathe Krishna with Ganges water. And those heavenly damsels dressed Krishna as a king, because this is an assembly of the demigods, Brahma and Shiva and Indra, well, the demigods are participating in the Abhishek, which would coronate Krishna as Govinda. And Krishna was reciprocating with the devotion of the demigods, but he found the Vedic hymns and all the ritualistic performances in Aishwarya really quite boring, until Shiva presented his gift, a flute that he had carved with his own loving hands. And Krishna was very enchanted with that flute. And he began to play such a sweet raga that everyone was mesmerized, and Govardhan began to melt in ecstasy. And those demigods began to sink and falter. And it seemed like a very unexpected grand finale. So Krishna, with his loving hand, placing it upon the head of Govardhan, pacified the mountain just as it would a frightened calf. And Govardhan was able to suppress his ecstasies until the ceremony was over. And Indra revealed his heart. And I was so enlightened and inspired and encouraged to see in this ceremony how much you love your devotees and how much you appreciate their love for you. And he begged forgiveness for his heinous offense. And Krishna, in a very innocent way, told him, it was out of kindness to you that I disrupted your sacrifice, because it was just making you more and more proud. And that's a disease which poisons the devotion in the hearts of my servitors. So simply out of kindness, not malice, I disrupted your worship. Indra was encouraged, and Krishna asked him, do you have anything else to ask or say of me? You are my devotee. You're very dear to me. Please reveal anything in your heart and let it be reconciled. And Indra began, or continue to request, I have another, that you kill the demons and bring the good kings of this world under your control. Because he was still afraid that his offense would have so much diminished his potencies that he'd be conquered by the demons. So Krishna assured him that will be. And Indra continued, and when all the kings of the earth assemble for war, my son will be there. My son was born of your aunt, Kunti. And because he will be so instrumental in conquering the assembled demons of all the world, that he will enjoy unending, universal fame, glory, and opulence, my request to you, O Govinda, is please protect my son Arjuna as you have protected me. Enlighten him with transcendental wisdom that he will not fall prey to the bodily conception which leads to false pride and inevitable Vaishnava. Please protect my son as you have myself. Krishna, so pleased by this request of Indra, assured him that due to my deep affection for your son, Arjuna, I will accept all the Pandavas as most dear to me. Arjuna will be the specific recipient of transcendental knowledge which I will reveal to him on the chariot, which will be shared by his brothers, all of whom I will return to Kunti unharmed. Without assurance. Indra was pacified, and the coronation proceeded and eventually concluded when, you see, this day, Balaram didn't go to the forest with Krishna. So, on pretext of examining the damage done to Govardhan and the surrounding areas, Krishna wandered off alone. But the gopas couldn't stay away for long. They came looking for Krishna. And they came in right at the end of the coronation ceremony and the Abhishek. And they were perplexed. What is this going on? And Krishna, who was so graciously reciprocating the devotion of the demigods, when he saw the gopas peeking out from behind the trees and bushes and rocks, what is going on? Krishna did not conceal his inner feelings that he really wanted to go play with the gopas, and he had about as much of this worship as he could handle. And the demigods, they picked up on this. They saw the gopas looking at them with very suspicious glances, so they thought they'd better go. They left rather hastily and left all their majestic paraphernalia and belongings scattered throughout Vrindavan Forest. And the gopas were looking at these opulences. I mean, the opulence of Vrindavan is supreme, but this is a kind of aishwarya that they've never seen. What is going on when they approach Krishna? So he's dressed as a king. And the only thing they could appreciate in the whole experience is that Krishna was the center, but they couldn't really relate to the kind of worship they had just witnessed. So they asked Gopal, well, his name is now Govinda, who were those beings? And Krishna spontaneously fabricated a series of the most outrageous stories that were so far-fetched that the gopas could neither comprehend or believe a word he'd said. So Krishna just distracted them from everything they'd witnessed by taking off his royal garments and ornaments and jewels and decorating the gopas with all the paraphernalia of the king. And then they began reciprocating with this mood of Krishna by picking up all these jeweled chamras and divine conch shells and arti paraphernalia and having another arti for Krishna. At this point, the devas were halfway back to the celestial planets, feeling themselves so more deeply fulfilled than they had ever experienced before, and just casting a glance one more time upon Govinda before he faded out of sight, and they saw the gopas. They made a game Radha just imitating everything they saw the demigods doing, and Krishna was relishing this so deeply. So one second, the demigods were feeling so deeply fulfilled that they had achieved the perfection of life in coronating Krishna with the new name and honor, Govinda, when they saw what these gopas are doing, and how Krishna was relishing it. So they thought, these gopas are in a category all of their own. So then, when Krishna and the gopas return to Nanda's palace, and Nanda Maharaj sees, Krishna is dressed as a king, and all the gopas have these celestial ornaments and implements and paraphernalia with which they're worshiping him in spontaneous joy. He was concerned. Where do you find these things? What happened in the forest today? He turned to Sri Dama. What happened? And he just, I don't have a clue as to what's going on today. But Mata Mangal was very forthcoming. Criticizing how it's not fair that that flute, an inanimate piece of dry bamboo, is constantly in the association of Krishna, but we can't even approach him. Providence has gone crazy. But when they heard that raga, it so deeply touched their hearts with the assurance that their deepest aspirations would surely be fulfilled, and they were consoled. Because each one felt that Krishna was specifically, personally speaking to her alone. And it was only Srimati Radharani, the very epitome of humility, who was feeling and also worthy. I am alone.
Even though you